This is a Gathering Heritage project interview recorded in County Louth in Ireland.
Now, I'd like to welcome Jim Curley to the Gathering Heritage project. And Jim is a retired fireman and a very keen genealogist. There you are, Jim. I got that right, didn't I? Yeah, I've been practicing that all morning. But his life changed a bit when he was contacted by a lady called Julie Dello. Now, Jim, tell me how you heard about this lady.
Well, I was on the Jerry Kelly show with LMFM talking about the fire brigade. I was up for an interview and he said your new hobby's genealogy, and he asked would I take on a wee job for him. And I said, yeah, well, what would we call it? I said, he says, a woman's looking for a husband. I said, being flippant, I turned around and said, it's a private detective you're looking for, not a genealogist. And during the break, we went into a break, and then he explained that this chap had left Dundalk in 1960. He had joined the English Army. He'd never been back. And he went to school in the Point Road. He played football for Dundalk. Things like this. I said, no problem at all. 2 hours walk. Little did I think that 2 hours was going to take the next 8 years to get the end result. That night I came home, and within 2 hours I discovered the information we'd been given, there was something seriously wrong. Rang Jerry the following morning and said, I need to talk to you, talk to this lady, because the information she had is obviously wrong in some directions. And he contacted her, and within 20 minutes they were she was on the phone to me, and we've been on the phone ever since.
This lady, you've never spoken to her before, you'd never know who she was, nothing at all about her.
He explained that her husband had died in 1981 and she was trying to find information.
You never heard from this lady before, ever again, ever rather, until that phone call.
Until that phone call. And she went on, I told her that the information she had was wrong, from what I could get her straight away. And I said, we need to go back to day one and tell me exactly what you know. And with that, she told me that in 1960, she went to a dance. She was only 17. And she met this famous man, Lynn Dello, at the dance. And he was his first night out of his army training. They were after doing 6 weeks basic training in the depot, and they weren't allowed out of that depot for it. So this was the very first night out. And it was obvious she was smitten straight away with him. He said he was 25, and he told her that night that he was born on a ship coming to Ireland from Spain, and from Spain to Cork, that he was fostered out in the Dundalk area on a farm with a McCann family that had three older brothers. But he says fostering wasn't good in Ireland, so just forget about that and move on. And within days, she realised she's head over heels in love with this guy, and ended up marrying within a year. For the next 20 years, they travelled the world with the army. He was in the pay corps in the army, and she worked in the different depots with him. She travelled the world with him. And he retired after 20 years in the army and opened a newsagent's in the Isle of Wight.
Now, up until then, she thought everything that he was saying was the truth.
Exactly. And when they'd opened the newsagent's in the Isle of Wight, within a year, he had dropped dead of a massive heart attack. And at that stage, they had one child, Chris, who was only, he was still only three. And naturally enough, she had to sell up the newsagent. She moved back to her mum and everything else. And as the times went by, she decided she'd do her own family tree, and then decided to, well, I better do something for Chris to show what the information she had on her dad.
So you do a lot of this in your spare time. So it was just for a couple of hours, yeah, kind of thing. Like, yeah, if I was asking you to do my family. Yeah. But things weren't as simple as that.
Definitely not. And she had told me that when she looked into it, her and the son actually came over to Ireland to check Bert's death records, and discovered that there was no record of Lynn Dello anywhere in Ireland. And then so she started to put it in newspapers, started to contact the McCann families. Practically every McCann family in the Dundalk area she contacted. Did you have a foster child? And nothing ever materialised with it. She then contacted Jerry Kelly on LMFM, and Jerry contacted me, and that's how the ball started rolling. From then we had to sort of, well, what exactly information we know? We looked at the football aspect of it. My dad played football for Dundalk and there was plenty of records, so we went through them. Definitely.
And what made you think about the football?
He had told her in his first love letter that he'd done many a thing. He played football with Dundalk. He sang with a dance band in Cork. He was a good singer. He used to sing Dean Martin, Perry Como type singings. And so we checked all the band people that was around the area at the time. Did they remember him? We had a good photograph of him that was taken within the first year he was in England.
And that was over all the papers and everything here, wasn't it?
Yes, we put an ad in all the papers to 1 week, hoping that we get as much coverage as possible.
Yeah. Like, do you know this man?
That's the way we put it. Do you know this man? Because if you start to put information in, you're already preempting stuff. So we were just throwing out the question. And because it was 1960 wasn't that far back, and there's plenty of us still around to remember those days, and hoping that, as you can see from the book, it's a good, clear photograph. But no hits whatsoever. Now, we were asking at that stage, this man left in the 1960. What we now know is complete opposite. When we then looked at the information we had, a good story on the Dundalk side, and maybe the footballers might be interested in this one. The anagram for Lindello, you can spell Donnelly. There was two Donnellys played for Dundalk. Joey Donnelly, that we all know. And another Donnelly that came from Limerick Town, played with the Pats in Dublin, transferred to Dundalk 1959. He played three games. I believe he scored in two of them. He's in the panel to play on the Sunday, doesn't play, and there's no talk of him ever since. So we thought, maybe this is our man. So we had to get photographs. I had to get photographs. It took me a while to get photographs from Limerick City, or Limerick Town, as it was then. And when I got the photograph, I sent it on to Julie and said, is he in this photograph? Because you'd never preempt it. And she studied it and she said, definitely not. I said, he wouldn't. She says, the one on the back on the left would be the most likely, but I know it's not him. I said, so the fella in the front in the middle? And she says, definitely not. I said, well, that's Donnelly, so it's definitely not him. So then what would often happen if you change your story, in other words, if you made up a story, if you didn't exist and you made up this story, you would end up with, shall we say, mistruths and misinformation. So when we looked at it, when we started to look at it, we could see that, was it a complete made-up story? Was it a case that it was somebody from here that had run away, driven away, didn't know their own background and had made it up? Had he robbed a bank? Had he left a wife and kids?
There were so many things it could have been.
Could have been, exactly. The different things we had to look at as well, DNA had come in at this stage, and the history of DNA when it comes in is, naturally enough, there's 23 pairs of chromosomes. One tells you whether you're a male or a female, but it's then the Y chromosome is passed down from male to male. And when you get your DNA done, it goes into a data bank. Anybody that's connected to you that has already done their DNA will be notified, and you're notified of them. But it will also give you a breakdown of where you're from and as much information as they can.
So who did you get this from?
We got the DNA done on Julie and on the son. As a result, we were able to work out Lynn's DNA. And we discovered straight away, no Spanish blood in them whatsoever. So we could disregard the Spanish story, all right? So it's obvious then it is a fictitious character we're working on. So we had to start off again. Then we looked at all unmarried mothers in the area that could have put kids up for adoption. Again, records wasn't that good. Adoption wasn't legally in. And we all know different people that we went to school with, shall we say, that's not really his mum. His mum is his sister and so on. So there was cases that we knew.
There was an awful lot of that around at that time.
Exactly. And there was some very sad cases in it. Now, a lot of them we could work out ourselves, going through the records. No, that child died. That child, that was fostered. That child was reared with his granny. You know, we could have. There was certain cases where I literally had to take the bull by the horns and contact family members and be very delicate, walking on eggshells, and saying, do you know your granny had another child or whatever? Now, some of the families, because, shall I say, I knew them or I knew the right people to talk to, and they were open about it. And I was shown the reason why I was looking for the information. And they would turn around and some of them were surprised. Some of them were very helpful. Some of them don't want to know. They sort of carry on. But some of the cases we came across were very sad. And there was one particular case, unfortunately, that a lot of the things matched in with the information we had. He even looked like our man. And when I contacted him, I had to tell him, do you know your mum had another child? And he says that explained an awful lot, because his mum had suffered very badly from depression. They knew it was something that happened in her early childhood, but would never talk about it. And the lady had died at this stage. And when he wanted to get in the plane the following morning and fly over to meet Julie. As far as he was concerned, he was going to meet his sister-in-law and his nephew. And I said, no, we have to wait and get the DNA done. We got the DNA done, and unfortunately come back, no connection whatsoever. So that chap now knows he is a half-brother out there, but has to start his search now. So they're the sad parts that's on it. We had to get a DNA again all over the world. America started it, and they have an awful lot more on it. The people that were in the data bank connected to Chris, because it would be Chris's DNA we would be working on, Lynn's son, it was turning out that they were mainly in America. They were all fourth, fifth and sixth cousins, but the one connection they had was North Loud. So we knew we were on the right track. It was definitely North Loud. You start to build up a family tree. So if you get somebody in Maryland, you get somebody in Boston, you get somebody in thing. We had to build up their family trees to see where they were connected to where our man could possibly fit in. It's like building a jigsaw without a picture. It's basically the way you can do it. We all start our own family trees, you know, your parents, your grandparents and so on. But if you don't know where to start, it's chunks of a jigsaw.
Now, by this stage, how many years was it going years at that stage?
Within the first 2 years, we had discovered an awful lot. We knew that it was a made-up name. We knew that there was no Spanish blood in them. We could eliminate certain things. We could eliminate the football. The bands, possibility, but we couldn't get a connection. If he did play with the bands, he definitely didn't play in this area. We were able to eliminate a certain day, and it was constantly ongoing. Not saying every night that I'd be working on it. Julie would be getting different bits and pieces, and anybody that was contacted on the DNA, Julie would be writing off to them, explaining her story and could he fit in anywhere in their tree.
Was there ever a time that you decided enough's enough?
Oh, there was many a time, especially when we would be so close to getting a hit, and then all of a sudden you were getting just like a kick in the teeth. And as it was Julie's favourite saying, flogging a dead horse, you know. But I always felt that we'd get through it and we'd find it. And the more it went on, we always laughed and joked and said there was a book and a film in this.
Because she loved him, you know, no matter what happened, she loved, and still does, as she says.
She turned around and she says he was the most honest man that she ever knew, and he also told her the biggest lies she ever heard, which I thought was very appropriate. But she says, when I told him, you know, like some of the information we might get, you mightn't like. And she says, if you come back and tell me he was a mass murderer, or come back and tells me that he had left a wife and kids, I will be disappointed. But she says, I still love him. For 21 years, she says, that man was the best thing that ever happened to her.
But living a lie, he was.
Living a lie. And when we got to the end of the story, you could see why she loved him and how honest he was. Different things that we done. We've Julie contacted a handwriting expert, a graphologist, I think it is how you pronounce it, a graphologist. But somebody that studies handwriting. And I didn't realise it, but it seems they can tell your personality, your whole background from your handwriting. So Julie had her first love letters. There's copies of them in the book, and she has posted copies over to me. And from that, the analyst was able to explain the type of character. And she says spot on everything that she said about him. So there was bits and pieces that it said. It's a contradiction. You know, how could he have been so... living the lie and still in all be so genuine. He was loved in the army, a fantastic record in the army. He was great for charity work. Everybody that knew him liked him. You know, there's not a black mark from him.
And at this stage, Was there any talk between you about why he did this?
Oh, yeah. We looked at a number of different things. You know, the first obvious things was it something to do, did something happen here? You know, did somebody get in trouble? Was it a relationship that broke up? Did he run away? Was he driven out? You know, we put it up then on Facebook, and Larry O'Hagan with North End and Friends had shared it a number of times with us. And of course, the danger with Facebook is it can go way off in different directions, such as he was a spy. He was this, especially when you see people had researched him and then seen this guy served all over the world with the British Army. He had to be a spy. Loads of, and we keep saying we know everything from him when he joined the army. We know everything from 1960 till the day he died. It's pre-1960. Does anybody know him here? And fair dues to Larry. Larry would constantly put it out every so often. And over the years, I used to get slagged, you know, did you ever find that mystery man of yours, or did you ever find that Lindello guy, or what's that funny name?
But between all, yous are still working at it.
We're still working at it. Now, again, you might be working at it tonight and chasing up a different lead and nothing happens, or you'd be waiting for a number of weeks for DNA to come back. Then we started to get breakthroughs. As I say, we were building up different ones of these family trees and everything else. Then an Irish girl, originally from Dundalk, Rosina McShane, lives in Dublin. She was doing our family tree and was tracing these in America and so on. But she came up as a connection for Chris. And what we needed then was to get her father to get tested to make sure we're in it. And the father surely came back as a hit, but on a female side, which totally confused us then because we didn't know where we were going. So every time you touch where we were going, we got in contact with all the different experts through the genealogy shows and everything else. And Dr. Tyrone Bowen, he done a thesis on Lynn's case, more or less the whole background from his DNA. He's one of the experts in DNA in the country. And he done a whole series of tests to try and figure out exactly what we got. And a lot of the information, again, brought us back to Northland. Everything kept coming back to Northland.
So that kept us going, really.
Oh, yes, definitely. Like, we always knew that, you know what I mean, we will find it. It's eventually, you know what I mean, because over time, DNA will be, everybody's DNA will be matched up. Things like that. Then we had... the breakthrough we had then was when Rosina, she was actually dosed with a cold, and she was, when you're bored silly and you have nothing else to do, family tree guys will walk away on their family. And she made a connection on a McAvoy connection in Durham in England. And it matched in with her own on her mother's side. So that was the connection to her. But that still didn't explain how she was connected. So we had to go back on her ancestors. And then, so you're constantly going up and down on different family trees to try and make it. And what we discovered was there was a Craven married to a McGuinness, and their daughter married a McAvoy. So it was a case of...
This is something like your old mother used to say,
yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. You know, yeah. She's a cousin, but don't ask, yeah. You know, all these different things. So when we... So we started to break down the different ones, and it was definitely... We knew we were in the right direction. It's getting close. Now...
Was this an exciting time, kind of? Oh, or yeah. Was it, you know, how did she feel?
She always felt that, you know what I mean, she knew he was good, and she wanted to get the end story. And the longer it went on, more determined we were to get to it. At times you'd think, you know, will we ever see the end of it? And especially when you got a kick in the teeth, you know what I mean, you were so close, and then all of a sudden, no, there was no records. Then we went on the DNA front. I were looking for different ones. We knew it was on the McCann aspect, different things. We got a breakthrough then with a chap in Australia, Henry, the snooker player. He's a relation of Stephen Henry, the snooker player in Scotland. And I thought, oh, there brings in Scotland, another country we're going to. And we've been around the world at this stage. And then we discovered Stephen Henry's granny or great granny comes from Falkhill. And all of a sudden, oh, that's getting close. And then I went looking, and I'd say I'm the only living person that ever walked up through Falkhill asking people to give me their DNA and survived it. Especially when I was asking, I'm tracing an English soldier and I want to take DNA from people. There were some great remarks passed on that. Some of them most certainly can't go out in the air. But as a result, we were in fact in Falkhill Road, there people would refer to as McCann land. There is an awful lot of McCanns and a number of McCanns that's married to McCanns. So we were really grasping at straws. And a number of people wouldn't do the DNA, but some of them did, and very helpful to us. And again, another kick in the teeth. We thought we were on the right aspect. And the actual McCann man we tested, it was, if we had to test him on the mother's side, it would have given us a hit, but we tested him on the father's side, so we missed out. But we knew we were very close, and everything was sort of falling into place. Like, Julie was doing so much, Rosina was doing in Dublin, I was doing stuff here, and we were constantly sharing on Skype and everything else, trying to get the whole thing together. Then we got the, as I say, when we got this snooker player, or sorry, the Henry in Australia, we knew then we were on the right track. We were down to McCann, the McCann, then McAvoy. There was all started the match in.
And how close were you about Dundalk?
Right. We definitely knew that it based in Dundalk, that there was definitely a connection. And we were talking about, at that stage, we knew at least his grandfather had to be in the Dundalk area. Then we were tracing the likes of the McAvoys come in. And at the time, Rosina came across, she was doing research on things. She found a McAvoy in Durham. And when she looked at the picture, she spotted, she thought there was a resemblance of our man in one of the photographs. So then we looked at him, discovered that, what way was it? Yeah, that Jimmy, there was Jimmy, Leo and Rose, right? And, but their dad was originally from Dundalk. So it was a fairly close hit. And we were looking then at see what we could, we needed to get a test on it. We discovered that Jimmy had actually moved back to Dundalk. And that I went looking for him. I discovered that he had a daughter, I believed at the time, a daughter called Simone. And I went looking for Simone McAvoy. I found Simone McAvoy in Douglas Hill. Now, I don't know about you.
So was this getting very, very, very exciting very now at this stage?
Very, very close. And again, when you're very close, you're always expecting the kick in the teeth and another kick in the teeth. I, at that stage, never knew a Simone in my life. It's a fairly unusual name. A Simone McAvoy, born in Liverpool, living in Dowdles Hill area. Would you believe there's two of them? And I rapped the wrong door. And I'm sort of explaining to this girl, it's actually a brother I want. I want. She says, I don't have a brother. I said, you do. And she says, no, I don't. And I said, there's never two Simone McAvoys. No, I don't think so. And I'm coming away. She says, hold on a second. She says, I was up for an appointment for an x-ray or something. And when I was called, the nurse normally rhymes off your date of birth. And when I said, no, that's not my date of birth. Oh, you must be the other one. And walked away. So she says, there must be another one. So back to the research anyhow. And when I came back, and actually I told my wife, Jacinta, what was after happening. She says, who exactly are you looking for? And I explained, oh, you mean Simone McAvoy? I said, what do you mean? She was born in Liverpool. Yeah. Yeah. The, what do you call it? She went on to explain that. I remember them. She says, their mum was killed in England in a car crash or whatever. And I said, how do you know? Well, she was home here with the babies. And the, what do you call it? Their dad was a coloured chap, so it was unusual for a coloured child. And she says, I can remember carrying that baby in Park Street when her mum was home. We were talking to her. I said, great, where do I go looking? So, cut a long story short, I discovered that Simone McAvoy is now Simone Foster, living in Banbridge. So, back on the phone, nailed down Simone and started to explain the situation. And I said, it's actually a brother, I need to get tested. We have, I need a male of a male. And she says, I can stop you there. You're talking about my grandfather, not my dad. And it seems that when her mum was killed, her grandparents reared her and they called them mum and dad rather than grandparents. And, I said, then I need to get a cousin because I need to test a male of a male and the McAvoy's to match the thing. And with that, she says, I was explaining why we needed to do it, what I was for sale. Oh, she says, I know that game. She says, I've been looking for my long lost uncle this year. And I said, where did he go missing or what? He went missing in England in 1959. I said, can you get me a photograph? She brought
her Jenny doubted her Jenny idea.
This is getting very close, you know. And when the she brought up the photograph on her computer, and I said, "That's him there, in a group photograph." And she said,
"What was the feeling like?"
And I said, "That's him." And she said, "You know," I said, "That's our man." And Usher, she was in tears. We were a thing, and then I had to ring Julie. "Are you sitting down, Julie? Why?" I said, "Are you sitting down? We found him." Well, I'm not joking. You could hear the screams. It was unbelievable.
How many years was it from that phone call that through the Gerry Kelly effort, and now when you're ringing Julie now? How
Eight
many
years? 8 years. And like, again, we weren't doing it every night. There was days that you'd be on it, working on it for a week, trying to nail down a particular family. There was other times that you'd have to wait 6 weeks for DNA to come back, and there was nothing you could do until you proved it. But so straight away, we had to start putting the things together. Julie was able to get photographs from Simone. Simone was able to get photographs from Julie. So Simone had everything up to 1959. We had everything from 1960 onwards. Then the next thing was to get Julie over here, meet all the relations. We had everybody that helped us in any way, yourself, mm-hmm. And Larry, Gerry Kelly, anybody that had helped us in any way doing their DNA test. We had a party above in the Crown Plaza.
It was exciting that night.
Oh, definitely. And it brought back so many memories and different bits and pieces. The help we had from the Bert Stets office, the library, anybody that had helped us in any way. Julie wanted to say thank you to them. The other thing was that, as I always said, Julie had promised, you know, there's a book and a film in this, and who was going to play us on the red carpet and all the laughs and jokes. And when everything happened, it ended up then that she went back to, she says, "I'm going to put this into down on paper." And when she started, you know, and she'd say, "I'm walking away," and I'm putting all our notes together, different bits and pieces. And the book is printed. The bit now that explains the whole lot. Why did he do it? That was the big thing. And what we now know, and we've proven this, and we're all shadow of doubt, different things. The other thing was Jimmy, Simone's grandfather, who was our man's brother, actually lived in Dundalk. He only died 2 years before we found the information. So for 6 years, he was living in Dundalk. And he had actually put ads in papers in England looking for our man. But again, that was an English person looking for an English man. We were an Irish person looking for, yeah. What we now know is that our man was Leo McAvoy. He was born in Durham, Stanley in Durham. He had Jimmy, his older brother, and Rose, younger sister. He had done his national service in the Air Force in the 50s, early 50s. He was over here then after that. We know he was here 57, 58 and 59. He would be a sort of a Del Boy type character. He smuggled tea across the border and sold it, as they called it, on a tea round. He played, I believe he was a sharpshooter on a snooker table and different things like that. He has, so that was his life here. He decided then in 1960 he'd go back and join the Air Force, which was now a pensionable job. When he went back, he failed the medical. The medical for the Air Force is stricter worldwide for the Air Force than it is for the Army. If he then went for the Army, which was also a pensionable job, he would have failed it because they would have pulled his Air Force files, hence making up a story of a name.
So he then, to get into the Army then?
Yes. Yeah. The experts had told us was that if you're going to make up a story, change your life, what you need to do is take someone else's life. You're most likely keep the day and the month, change the year. It's far easier to pick someone you know and use their life than to make up a complete life. What we now know is he picked the majority of it from his aunt's family. His aunt, who lived out in the Falkill Road, had three older brothers. They lived on a farm. So when anybody asked him a question about his life, he automatically taught it them. So you don't get the information wrong. Or if you're making it up, the danger is you'll forget something or you'll give a different answer. If he had passed the medical, Julie would never have met him. There would have been no story in this at all.
He would have been in the Army and
that would have been it. Yeah. What we do know is when he got into the Army, he'd done the 6 weeks basic training, met Julie on the first night out. We have love letters from day one right up to the married. They travelled the world. She says, "I had a ball of a lifetime." She says, he lived, if you like, two lives. He was the most honest man in the world, but he told her the biggest lie in the world. And she, you'd know when you meet her. Well, you did meet her. And yeah. She is just one lovely lady. And the story, as she put it here in the book, and you can see from her love letters, the whole lot's printed, the DNA, the whole background of how the DNA works, the handwriting expert, and the different peoples. But from the first night, she even explains about going down to the, getting ready to go to a first dance and meeting him on that night. And right up to when I got involved with her, and then the whole scenario for that 8 years. And I was on the phone to her the other night, and this is 2 years after we found him. So the book's published and the last fortnight, and we're planning to do a book launch here on town. You can get it on Amazon, and the name of the book
is the name of it?
My Man's Secret.
It's a good name, isn't
it? My Man's Secret, One Man, Two Lives, One Woman. My Man's Secret, True Story by Julie Dello. It's on Amazon, and we're hoping to do a book launch here where it'll be sale here in local shops.
Now, just the only thing that I found strange about the whole thing, and I talked to you on the radio and everything about this, is his name. Yeah. Because there's no man that I ever heard of was called Lynn.
Yeah, Lynn we would normally associate as a girl's name, right?
Did he do that maybe to
camouflage it? We don't understand. It's the one bit that we have. The experts have told us that we should look at, shall we say, places, even the back of a boat, the name of a boat, postcards, all these different things. What we do know is that we have the Lynn Dello as all one word and Dello as one word. Are both Spanish surnames.
So, Julie is Dello, but there's no such name.
No, we had actually proved that she was actually Mrs. Dello. We had to get legal advice on it, and it seems he'd done a sworn affidavit with the army to get his overseas papers, and that would be the equivalent of changing your name by deed poll. So she is Mrs. Dello legally, and the son is Chris Dello, and he is very proud of his dad, and Lynn would definitely be very proud of Chris. He's a fine young fella.
Well, I know that you are going to send a copy of this to Lynn, to Julie, yeah. And I'm sure she will be delighted, because what you've just done is you have made it very, very simple, the way you went through it and the different things, you know, mm-hmm. And I'm sure she'd be thrilled to hear what you have to say about it.
No, it was a great story. As I say, I should have charged per hour rather. Jerry Kelly would never be able to afford me. It's something you enjoy. Anybody that does family trees, we'd get a great kick out of it. Mm. And we never thought it was going to take so long.
Did you miss it when it was all over?
We're still, the book is keeping us going. And as Julie says, now we have to start on to the film. We have to sell the film rights and things like that.
There might be a wee spot for me in that. Most certainly
we need a radio man, definitely, there. Like, the story itself, it's true, it's genuine, and it is a lovely wee story, as you see there in the book. It would be great to make it into a film. You know, and we've seen over the years.
It would work very well in the film because it would be visual.
Visual, exactly. You know. And like DNA, 10 years ago, DNA was only coming on the scene. Mm. Nowadays, I use it regularly for family trees. I have traced people around the world on DNA.
It's incredible.
It is fantastic.
Well, Jim Kenny, thank you very much indeed. And just to tell you again, the name of the book is My Man's Secret, A True Story. And it's by Julie Dello. And can I thank you very much, Jim? It's really very, very interesting. A great story. And you told it very, very well.
Thank you very much.
And we look forward to her listening to it. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much, Larry. It's a pleasure to do it, and I think the project you're working on is even better.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Listen to lots more epic interviews at gatheringheritage.com.